Our next case on the calendar is A190260, which is State of Minnesota versus Josiah Taylor, defendant and absolute bail bonds appellant. So do we have counsel here for absolute bail bonds?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Great. Thank you. So you are the only party arguing this morning, as I understand.
Your Honor.
Okay, good. Welcome. I called the case, and you will have 15 minutes, and you'll have nothing to rebut, so we'll leave you with 15 minutes of argument then this morning.
Thank you, Your Honor.
When you're ready, just state your name and the party you represent for the record, please.
Good morning. Scott Nielsen, Henson & Efron, here on behalf of Absolute Bail Bonds. This is an important bail bond case in this state. We're here to find out whether certain maxims and principles that are often stated in the bail bond case law actually have any meaning or if they're hollow. And those maxims provide the framework that the district courts use to apply the Shetsky factors. One of those maxims is that bail bonds are supposed to be, and the forfeitures are supposed to be liberally construed in the surety's favor. Another maxim is that forfeitures are not to be used to punish the surety. And finally, Your Honors, another thing that is often stated in bail bond cases, or has been stated in bail bond cases, is that any forfeiture should be proportionate to the claim prejudice to the state. That is in part because bail bonds are contracts, and contracts law says you can't have just a per se pure penalty.
Where the state has not participated in a bail bond case at either the district court level or at this court, do we need to consider prejudice? I mean, can there be any showing of prejudice where the state that carries the burden to show prejudice doesn't participate at all?
No, there is no prejudice. And in fact, there is no prejudice to the state in this case, and the district court so held.
And so when a bonding company has the state not making any argument whatsoever that it has been prejudiced, and there's a petition for reinstatement and discharge filed within 90 days, what does a bonding company usually anticipate will happen?
In a normal case, on these facts, Your Honor, most judges in this state would have reinstated and discharged this bond.
Without penalty.
The defendant was quickly back in custody within 27 days of the bonding company receiving notice. And the liberal construction required of bail bond statutes is to encourage sureties to give. Yes, Your Honor.
Well, I think Judge Shulhouse's question was a little different than that. If I may follow up. Because I think she asked you about where the state isn't participating and their state isn't claiming prejudice, you know, what would happen. And you were talking about on these facts, and these facts include more than just no prejudice. So could you just come back to her question about, or at least the way I was interpreting it, which I was going to ask as well, where the state doesn't appear, the state's not claiming prejudice, shouldn't that just end it?
We agree, Your Honor. It should.
And is that typically in your client's experience what happens?
Oftentimes in my client's experience, yes. This is an unusual case because I am not aware of a single case in Minnesota history, and I'm sure there have been tens of millions of bail bonds, where a forfeiture of this magnitude was upheld or even issued in the first place for a defendant who was quickly back in custody, whether the bonding company got him back in or law enforcement. This has not happened.
So as a matter of law, does Shetsky require that all factors be met?
Yes.
So you're saying that if the fourth factor, which is prejudice in the state, is not established by the state, that as a matter of law requires the outcome that you're asking for, or is it a balancing of the four factors?
I would prefer it was just the one, but in honesty, I think it is a balancing of four factors, but
okay,
I think
so
it does.
So it may not be necessary. Or is there case law saying that the prejudice to the state is a necessary necessarily needs to be established.
There is not.
Okay.
There is not case law that I know of that simply says if there is no prejudice to the state, then there can be no forfeiture. However, there is case law that says that any forfeiture must be proportionate to the claim prejudice of the state, and that's in Farsdale. So,
Help me. I thought that the way it works was if the on balance the first three Chesky factors are met, then the burden there's some sort of burden of production or burden shifts to the state to show prejudice. Is that not the case? And so, if the state that gets back to my if the state doesn't show prejudice, doesn't that end the story? But maybe you're more familiar, I'm sure, with this case law than I am.
If the state doesn't show prejudice, I think there is a problem with the Chesky factors to begin with, because otherwise it is a pure penalty and it is solely to punish the surety, which the Minnesota Supreme Court says cannot happen.
Okay, so if there was a case, I'm just trying to figure out what we're saying about the law. So if we looked at the three factors, and let's say the third factor, the good faith efforts of the bond company, let's say that there was a finding supported by the evidence in a case that there was no good faith effort by a bond company, and yet the state didn't come forward with prejudice.
I think in that case, there are four factors under Chesky. However, there is case law that says any forfeiture has to be proportionate to the claim prejudice of the state. So if there's no prejudice to the state, then there shouldn't be a forfeiture. In this case, Your Honor, there was good faith efforts of the surety to locate defendant on unusual facts where the defendant on his third day trying to appear pro se and obviously not very successfully because he was a convicted criminal at a gun range with a gun firing it. He had no defense from what I understand. And he left court because he was afraid to continue to represent himself, and he was out of custody trying to earn money and raise money to hire a private attorney. And Absolute actually spoke with him multiple times, as well as with his mother. He actually called, very unusual, because Absolute deals a lot of forfeiture, very unusual. He was proactively calling Absolute, giving Absolute his phone number so they could keep in contact with him and explaining the situation. In Absolute's experience, this was not a case where someone was fleeing and running from the state, and they were allowing him some time to raise money. However, they did, they did search for information on him, his mother, his wife, his sister, his father, his cousin, and friends, and on social media, and using computer-based research tools to try to locate him.
Is your argument right now that the court, would you agree that the district court found that there was not a good faith effort, and are you arguing that was clear error? Are you arguing that the district court, what are you saying about the finding of the district court, and what's our standard of review of that finding?
The district court did clearly err and misapplied the Chesky factors on that, because the Chesky factor says the good faith efforts of the surety to locate the defendant. It doesn't say that the surety has to be able to get the defendant back in custody. And in fact, in Chesky, which was an unusual case where the defendant fled in 1945, the bond petition was actually not filed till 1950, and he was apprehended by the FBI. And in that case, the surety made absolutely no efforts whatsoever to apprehend him, simply paid the bond, and then assigned their bond reinstatement petition back to the defendant. In that case, where there certainly was no efforts at all by the surety, the Chesky court said the good faith efforts of the surety to apprehend or locate him. It didn't require the surety to actually apprehend or locate. It's just that there were efforts. And in this case, there were efforts by the bonding company to try to get the defendant back into custody, and they spoke with a bounty hunter to have him go out and locate him in the field. That groundwork of trying to develop information and trying to find out where he might be located or what people he might be with, that's the groundwork and the background work that is done by the bonding company before they send the bounty hunter out into the field. In this case, 27 days after receiving notice of forfeiture, the police simply picked defendant up. It may have been a traffic stop, I don't recall.
So I guess my concern with kind of the earlier Chesky factors and the district court's application of those is, so the district court says, you know, that plaintiff's argument fails to provide a sufficiently detailed account of the attempts to locate and secure the defendant. You know, in looking at the affidavit, I mean, under an abuse of discretion standard where, you know, it's pretty general language. Well, we left a voicemail, in contact, began texting and calling defendant without giving details about when those things happened or how many times. that's where I struggle, and perhaps you could help me with this, to say it's an abuse of discretion for the court to say that's not sufficient detail on as far as those attempts.
There is, you know, a couple things here, Your Honor. Again, on the Shetsky factors, there is nothing in Shetsky. As an example, the district court also faulted the bonding company for not providing itemization of expenses relying on State versus Vang. That is simply a gross misreading of State versus Vang. Vang is the only case in Minnesota that references that information about itemizing expenses, and it was in a case where the defendant was never returned to custody. The bonding company moved to petition 6 months later, okay? And in our case, could the bonding company have said, on March 5, we did this? The affidavit actually said, we immediately called, we spoke with them, but they didn't say which dates. I'm not sure why that makes a difference in the analysis.
But we know whatever they did happened after February 28, the date of non-appearance,
correct,
and April 1, the day he was apprehended by law enforcement. So whatever they did, we know they did it during the month of March.
Correct.
On some date in March.
Right, on multiple occasions. And in Absolute's experience, they typically, very unusual to have a defendant calling them and saying, here's my phone number, here's what's happening, I'm going to go back in. Now, his mom's the co-signer, and she's responsible for now $116,100 forfeiture. This is the only case like this in Minnesota, and that is why it is important to determine and tell the district courts that you should use the liberal, liberal construction means something. Not punishing the surety means something. Having forfeiture reasonable in relation or proportionate to the claim prejudice, that means something. I think a lot of district courts, and at least this district court judge, abused her discretion under the Shetsky factors by not having that framework in mind. Would you like me to go through any of the facts, or I can?
You don't need to, for my sake. We're very familiar with them. Thank you.
I have one comment I'd like to make before you leave.
Yes.
Your notice of appeal indicates that you are appealing both from the order denying reinstatement and discharge and the order denying the motion for reconsideration. There never was a notice of filing of the order in this case, undoubtedly because the state didn't participate at all, but there is no right of appeal from an order denying a motion to reconsider.
I'm aware of that, Your Honor. Sorry for that. I was trying to be excessively careful because of the unusual situation in part on the $25,000 bond, which was never forfeited till after I filed the notice of appeal, or I filed the notice of entry of order. And I raised the $25,000 bond issue with the district court, and the district court did not address it. And so now we have a second appeal.
That's a separate appeal.
Yeah. I tried to combine them.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your
Honor. Our case is submitted. We'll have a decision out in a statutory time.
Thank you.
Thank you.